Off the Ball, GAA.
What a game of football. What a game of football for the neutral, I suppose, watching it at home on TV. What a day for our supporters of Westmeath and the people of Westmeath.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50mg film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150mg tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
How's everybody feeling this rainy Wednesday morning?
Better now that I've figured out where you were going with that Germanic.
I meant
germinating
in the Germany stage. There you go. Yeah, and I struggled. Decided to move on quickly, call myself out, and move on. But you brought it back to my struggling vocabulary. So thanks a million for that, Enda. We'll go through some of the papers, I think, to start things off, because there's a lot to talk about. Not least, Jarlett Burns did some media yesterday. I'm going to have the Irish Examiner first. GA Jim Jam. We applied the rules, insists Burns. Also, just an interesting thing here from Tadhg Morley, who was speaking yesterday, the Kerry player, and he talks about Micheál Burns obviously deserving to be sent off. But there is an interesting bit that Tommy mentioned when it happened as to whether there might be a possible appeal. But it is, did the referees and his team see what Micheál Burns did before they came out at the second half and sent them off? And he goes, I don't think... he was there at that part of the incident, unless his linesman or someone saw it. But even that, I'm not actually sure. Are they allowed to do that? Are they able to do that? I don't really know. But look, in fairness, I'm sure he made the right call. Just something that's interesting. I don't know whether Kerry are appealing the Burns suspension. I don't think they are. But if they were...
I didn't think that at the time, because...
feel like they probably saw the incident on their phone.
They'd be doing very well to see it in real time.
With so many players on the pitch.
Yeah, and I understand why they wouldn't jump to any conclusions, or not jump to any conclusions, but make a big decision and give a red card before halftime because everything was so hectic. So there is logic to seeing it, waiting and giving it, but you can't then go in and check it on your phone or your laptop or your television. I don't know if they did do that, but it would make a lot of sense.
They certainly can within the rules, although I kind of don't know why. I think maybe you just move on with that kind of stuff.
But it's one of them, though, where do you draw the line, you know? If you start allowing, you know, to be going at half-time and have a look and you see something that happened, how long ago do you go? If something happened 20 minutes ago.
When it happens at half-time. So it hasn't been adjudicated on yet. They want to get everybody in for the safety of all players. And it's like, man, that's the window. You have the window of post-hooter, pre-throw-in.
Yeah, I suppose that could work, yeah.
But it obviously isn't in the rules, it's kind of irrelevant, I suppose.
There's enough evidence there to suggest that they may not have seen it, but there's also enough evidence to suggest that he might have seen it. He was behind it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I think I'm not really.
I think you see a player bust open, something happened here. There was
Jimmy Gittes was right beside it, and it was
Micheál Burns. So
yeah,
kind of putting two and two together here that something happened.
True, except for the fact that Jimmy Gittes was right beside it and thought it was Dermot O'Connor.
Yeah, that's true. The thing. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I don't know if anybody on the pitch saw it at the time. But look, it doesn't. I just don't. That certainly isn't the big controversy. I think what the big controversy obviously is the lack of any suspensions or CCCC involvement from that game. That's obviously Jarlett's been talking. That's on basically all of the Irish papers this morning. That's the big story. In some ways, just kind of saying, look, this has nothing to do with us, which I thought it's a strange thing for the GAA president to kind of come out and say. Maybe it's a brave thing to say because you know it looks bad, but that is the situation. The CCCC has a set of rules to play with and the GAA don't interfere with that, certainly not at executive level. So there is a part of me that kind of understands where he's coming from, but it just feels a bit kind of fluffy, doesn't it?
I don't know. There is so many different levels of appealing processes in the GAA already. Do you really want to bring the GAA executive level into this as well and have the GAA president dealing in suspensions and appeals and bits and pieces like that? You probably don't. He is correct in what he's saying, though, is that, and Jim Gavin sort of explained this and we clarified it with the GAA last week, that if it's in the referee's report, then the CCC can do something. If it's not in the referee's report, or if it has deemed to be adjudicated on by the referee in the report, then the CCC can't do anything.
Mm.
So it would have had to been reported by the referee to say, I didn't see this, or it would have had to not be reported on at all by the referee for the CCC to do anything by their remit. So really they can't, they're just stuck between a rock and a hard place because the referee said that he dealt
with it. So. And that is the technical truth as well, whether that should be or not, or whether that sounds right when, you know, there is a direct sanction there for it. Why is the referee not including that in his report is probably the question that should be asked somewhere along the lines. The other thing is, like, they put themselves into this terrible position. I don't think anybody thinks Jim McGuinness should get a 12-week ban for this. I don't think anybody thinks that should be the end of his season. Yeah. And his involvement with Donegal in a possible All-Ireland winning year. And where do they go from here? That's a massive sanction on Donegal for something that, as Jim pointed out in his way, there was 50 people involved in. So I think that's understandable. But just you just have the Ger Brennan thing just looming over this whole thing. You can't have one rule for one and one rule for another. But they've backed themselves into this corner where maybe technically they have got away with it this time, but that might not happen next time.
Mm. Well, with Special Congress, this is, they're actually at fault for all of this, because this rule was voted through by the Special Congress, I think it was last year or the year before, and it was voted through that it was an automatic 12-week ban, and this was voted by a 90% majority. So overwhelmingly agreed across county board levels that this should be a blanket 12-week ban. We will probably see a reduction in that, or an evolution of this rule that they've added in to include extenuating circumstances where maybe the referee's report is considered, or the appeal process is a little bit easier, whereby it's not as cut and dry that there was actually nothing they could do with the Ger Brennan stuff because it broke this rule and it was an automatic blanket 12-week ban, whereas now we might in future see a new rule to say we can look at it to see if we can reduce the ban.
Devil's advocate for 1 second. Ger Brennan got this extortionate punishment, right? That has massively affected Dublin's year. It's massively affected him. And like the fact that this is a proper GAA ban as opposed to like a match ban from inter-county level. You know, there's been talk, I think Jarlett mentioned yesterday, it was definitely mentioned on radio last week, that, you know, Ger Brennan is like dropping his kids to the gates of GAA training and driving away, you know, like that's the level and the extent of this. That's kind of incredible for what he did, right? And the fact that we're in such a condensed inter-county season where he's missing so much of Dublin season absolutely comes into that as well. However, we haven't had an incident all year until this one, which, even though Jim McGuinness didn't get banned, has caused a 2-week story, which we don't get too many of these days, like, you know, and look, we're probably as much as anyone to blame for that. But is this just going to be something that gets stamped out if you keep that rule on the books?
Yeah, well,
what if you're not, but they're not applying it though?
But grand, but does the next person feel like, oh, they're not going to apply it to me too because Jim McGuinness got away with it?
I think
it's a 2-week story means that this is very, very on the minds of people now in a way that wouldn't have been before. And you mentioned just before we came on air of, like, you know, incidents of other managers in the past doing it on kind of a regular basis and stuff like that. I do. And I said, oh, that was years ago. And you're like, it wasn't years ago, but it almost feels like it was because I feel like they've made such a step for this not to be a thing anymore. I wonder if keeping this, as crazy and all as it is, it might not even come up again.
Well, we thought that when Ger Brennan got the 12-week ban, though.
Yeah, I think like you're underestimating how big of a story that was. I think you understand how big of a story the Ger Brennan one was at the time. It wasn't this, obviously. But I think it was big enough to put people off doing it.
Yeah.
And it didn't put people off doing it because Jim McGuinness went and done it.
League versus Championship spotlight.
But again, it's the same when you were saying there about the, like, no one wants to see such a influential character and figure and important person for the GAA and the sport.
That shouldn't matter.
You know, in an All-Ireland, potentially All-Ireland winning season, like, that shouldn't make any difference at all. Like, I know it. It's easy to say it hasn't. There's no proof that it has, but I mean, they haven't banned him. And it's the same thing with, you know, I don't know what they, if it happened in a game between New York and Fermanagh at the weekend where no one's really watching it, if a similar thing were to happen, would they ban them? I don't know, because people wouldn't be up in arms about it so much because it's not Jim McGuinness. So there's two sides to it, but I don't know. I know what you mean there. I get the point about it being a two-week thing where it's such a big story that people would be put off doing it because they can't afford... If anything even slightly remotely close happens again, they cannot not do anything about it. But if they do something about it, it opens up a whole other can of worms that they've somehow not even managed to open up on this occasion. It's far more complex than it needs to be.
Yeah.
If it's a rule, it's a rule. You apply the rule.
I would say, though, that Enda and Jarlett Burns and the way Enda has described it there, like, that is, I think, I don't know if it's necessarily a cop-out. I think it's a cop-out within the rules. But I think that because of that, this was just sorted in advance and we just didn't realise that until it happened.
I think most people just didn't realise the rule at the time because, again, if we're talking, this is actually more of a refereeing situation than what the rule actually is, because Jared Brennan would not have been banned if the referee had not dealt with that on the pitch. Yeah. So we're almost, I think the smarter option would actually be for the referees to be a little bit more clever with their match reports and not take any rash decisions on the pitch. Don't send the managers off.
Yeah, but
maybe make a decision that this has been dealt with and then allow...
You see, I don't want...
Or don't put it into the referee and then allow the CCC...
It's like when the bunker came in rugby, that like referees just stopped making
what's
decisions
happening with
on the pitch.
Now is not making
it's like,
decisions.
There's
not
no
doing...
point in a ref then if he's not dealing with situations on the pitch.
No, I tell you what, it was referenced in the report though this time, so it was dealt.
The referee gave Jared Brennan a red card.
Yeah.
Therefore, it could not have been changed or overturned. It could only be appealed. The CCC didn't look at the Jared Brennan thing. It was dealt with by the referee, and then they.
I think the red card could have been overturned, but the sanction can't be.
Exactly.
Yeah. Whereas in this case, the referee said that he dealt with it and didn't see it as a sanctionable offence.
Yeah.
So that's why. And when Jarlett Burns talks about not re-refereeing a game, I just think that is. I don't know if that's the hill that the GAA need to be dying on about Jarlett repeating in so many interviews yesterday about handing the referee a whistle for 70 minutes and then not re-refereeing the game and after that our hands are tied. It's like, I'm sorry, but like Michael Murphy at the league final, and it's not to make a villain out of Murphy, and it's obviously that was over the top what in Killarney, the kind of response to it, but just as the most cut and dry example in my head, it was a clear red card offence that was dealt with on the pitch as a yellow card. Why is a referee's mistake not taken into account when we judge these things? You know, it's this not re-refereeing a game. Take Michael. Look, I want you to take. Pretend I'm talking about two different players, and none of them are from Donegal.
I'm not sure I would agree with because then we just fall into the whole thing of we literally are re-refereeing games in that case.
But in extreme circumstances, and I don't think this would qualify as an extreme circumstance. Yeah. I think maybe the Murphy punch in the league final would.
When you're suggesting there about not making a decision in the moment and leaving it, is that not re-refereeing the game as well?
I think what Enda was saying was actually slightly darker.
Literally refereeing the game. Like, it's making a judgment call based on the rules. It's like, do I think... Is it a bookable offence as opposed to a red card offence? Let's not make a rash decision to send Jared Brennan off and bring this whole...
I think that's actually a darker thing than what the lads are talking about, where referees are in the moment thinking about the consequences of their decision based on the rule book. You know, and basically opting out of a punishment... because they feel the rules are too harsh.
And that punishment could or should, in that case, change the game in itself. But if you're not sending someone off, they should be sent off for something egregious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The game is not being affected as it should.
Well, maybe we need a bunker rule.
No, we don't.
In the sense...
Well, no one needs a bunker rule.
Let's say not an in-game bunker rule. Let's say a post-game bunker rule where the referee had the choice to say, I'm going to book you, Jer. That's my decision for this.
But it'll
be looked at after the game, and then we can look at it.
I just think in this case, they should have, like, it's easy to say now in hindsight, they should have had a gradient in the suspensions, that it shouldn't have just been 12 weeks hard and fast. It should have been 12, 6 and 3, and then you can judge it after the fact, which is the most egregious.
Exactly.
Jim McGuinness probably would have been a 3 week if that's the lowest grade, because it wasn't that egregious.
Yeah.
Whereas Jared Brennan maybe would have been 6 weeks because he pushed someone to the ground, whatever it is. But the fact that they've just put out 12
weeks. They need to. So it's funny because I watched this game live. We talked about this afterwards. But like, what McGuinness did for me was so far after the event, after the melee had got out of hand, that it's not to say, like, you know, we have a punishment for a third, or, you know, third man in, right? Everything that comes after is generally waved off. Like, that's when it comes to players. And for me, there was like five or six Marishkas for both teams that got involved in that and escalated that entire messing well before the punch, that I think, and saying this in real time, I'm like, it should be an automatic red card and suspension for anyone with a bib getting involved in these things. They make it a million times worse. Before I knew that McGuinness had laid his hands on anyone, I think by the time Jim gets involved, it had got completely out of hand, and obviously something had happened, and there was a kind of an argument that was happening anyway, and it was just a kind of a two-handed push. Yeah. It's not doing any harm to anybody, let's face it. It shouldn't be happening. I'm in no way saying that that should be just let go, but it wasn't the end of the world. I honestly think, when you talk about degrees of punishment, I think then you'll say, oh, well, the Marishku comes in like a lunatic, shouting in people's faces and completely escalating the situation. We're just like, well, I was on the minor side. I never hit anybody. I can't get more than a week. You know, yeah. I just think, I feel just like keep those people off the pitch.
They should be disciplined by the county boards or something. Like, they shouldn't be anywhere near the pitch in that case.
They shouldn't be. They shouldn't. Most of them shouldn't be anywhere near the pitch.
It was a Marishka
or the sideline.
It was a Marishka that wasn't registered correctly in the Dublin Galway game as well.
Yeah.
That caused all the kerfuffle with Jared Brennan.
There you go.
So.
Right, will we move on? Come back to it tomorrow again.
Yeah, jeez.
The other end of the Examiner, which we were talking about 2 hours ago there, was the big news really from GAA this morning is that, I'm not even in the screen here, but Ling steps down as Kilkenny manager. Derek Ling stepped down after 4 seasons in charge as Kilkenny manager. That's obviously in a lot of the other papers as well today. Derek Ling, 4 years, got to an All-Ireland final in his first year. They lost the semi-final to Clare the second year. They were very unlucky to lose the semi-final to Tipperary. In his third year, there was 3 Leinster titles in that time as well. And then this year was, let's face it, an utter disaster for Kilkenny. And it did feel as though his time had probably just run its course. Given what happened, I know he started a new term this year and brought in a new management team, but given the way it went in the Leinster Championship for Kilkenny, it did feel like it was inevitable that Derek would step down. But I do feel like he's somebody that's, you know, probably took on an impossible job in the post-Brian Cody era and did so with a diminishing team as well. Like, much like Alex Ferguson knew when it was time to go, Brian Cody certainly did as well. And to win 3 Leinster titles and get to an All-Ireland final, and God, I remember going in the rainy, sitting in a really weird place down at the bottom of the Davin stand over, you know, in the corner on the sideline for that All-Ireland final in the rain on my own, and going in at halftime, Owen Cody had put on a masterclass of thinking, I don't see how Limerick are going to get back into this game.
Yeah.
And then obviously Limerick very much got back into the game and Peter Casey scored 6 points or whatever it was, and Limerick ended up winning easily. But Kilkenny weren't that far away, and they certainly weren't last year either, with the Oisín O'Donoghue goal for Tipperary and the scoreboard malfunction.
Yeah, like,
unbelievable. Like, yeah. You know, so what do you guys think? I just think, first of all, just to say, like, fair play to Derek Ling. I think he's somebody that gave everything to it, took on an impossible job, and didn't come away with nothing either.
No, I don't think he'd be remembered with anything other than a high degree of positivity, really, within Kilkenny. I'm sure, obviously, within Kilkenny, the expectation is to go on and win the All-Ireland, and they've come up short in that over the last couple of years. And then I suppose this year, and Arthur was talking about this last night, because the way the Hurling Championship is structured and how kind of not easy, but how much of a strong possibility it is that the best counties in Munster, and well, less so Munster but more so Leinster, can get out of Leinster, not necessarily make the final, but at least get out of it. When you don't do that, it's heightened to an even more degree. For them to be the fourth best team on paper in Leinster this year is obviously a disaster for a county of Kilkenny stature, and it seems as though things are trending in a There's only so far down you can go, really, with the way in which hurling is in Ireland and the fact there is a floor you can reach. Mm. You're not really going to drop any lower, but things don't seem to be trending upwards for them. And it probably has just come to its natural end.
Yeah. I think your point about the fact that they'd be remembered fondly and, you know, with no malice, I think speaks to the fact that Kilkenny people are inherently worried about what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I think if this was something that they felt, if this was a team that they felt could win All-Ireland or do better, I think there'd be a lot of blame out there for the manager, absolutely. No matter who he was.
Yeah, and they'd be ruthless enough. They'd be ruthless enough in that sense as well. And things haven't been smooth this year either, of course. Like, as far as injuries go, Adrian Mullin missed a lot of the campaign. Hugh Lawler is obviously gone.
Yeah, Billy Ryan Hugh Lawler gone travelling. Like,
they were their two best players, really, over the last couple of years. You know, two of their best players, at the very least. And, you know, it's been well documented the lack of success they've had. Tangible success, anyway, at underage level. I'm not always sure how much you need to be winning All-Irelands and winning Leinster Championships and all that sort of stuff, but you need to have some form of supply chain coming through. And maybe it is somewhat of a... You could maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, draw some form of line to the way things have gone with Dublin, in that they had such a successful panel for so long that took up the guts of a decade, and that maybe there's a bit of a lag now, in a gap of a couple of years, where they probably didn't have the players coming through at the right ages to come in. And, you know, Richie Hogan talks about how difficult it was for him and TJ and all them lads to even get a run.
Yeah.
Initially, whereas now you've lads coming through and you're pinning everything on them, which isn't fair on them, but also isn't it's not sustainable, really, either, you know. So it'll be a long way back for them, but it'd be interesting to see what route they go down now. Like, is it a Henry job? Will Henry take it? Will Henry want it?
So the three contenders in one of the papers there I saw was Brian Dowling, Kildare manager, who's obviously done an unbelievable job, is a Kilkenny man. You have Eddie Brennan, who obviously has been involved this year and did a great job when he was with Laois. And you have Henry. And Henry, obviously, won the All-Ireland with Ballyhale, went to Galway. I don't think he had too much to work with in Galway, really. It was a transitional period, but did okay. And took on the Kilkenny under-20s, and that felt like it was the sort of job before the seniors. Kilkenny under-20s lost to Galway in the Leinster final. Now, it was perceived as a good Galway team, but Clare beat them pretty well in the under-20s final on Sunday. And I watched a lot of the Munster games, and it was a very, very good Tipp team and a very good Cork team, and Clare got better as the year went on. Limerick probably had a little bit of an off year, but they weren't too far off, and neither were Waterford.
Yeah.
And then you kind of think, right, God, what is actually in Leinster? You know, like, obviously they're producing... Galway would be delighted with that team because they're producing... There's three players that are going to play senior hurling, or two of them already are, on a regular basis in Nyland and Rabbit. But there's three or four players. That's what you need. I don't know if Kilkenny are doing that. They talked about this on... But they thought about it. It's like, when was the last time everyone was excited around the country about a Kilkenny player coming through? Like, I remember, like... Richie Hogan or Richie Power, when they were like minors, or when they were 15, 16, you were kind of hearing about them. And I don't remember the last time there was it's Cork lads that you're hearing about these days.
Well, Richie Hogan actually made an interesting point on this on Off the Ball last week after Kilkenny got knocked out. And he basically spoke about that exact scenario, in Kilkenny, when those lads were coming through, like, they had to sit on the bench for large periods of time and wait for their time to push out some of the old guard. Whereas nowadays in Kilkenny itself, as soon as there's one lad that seems to be hopeful coming through, the whole county are shouting for him to get into the first team. And that's a complete change in the standards of Kilkenny hurling.
Yeah.
And that just seems to be, I mean, like, there's certain elements where you can look at this and maybe it's cyclical. Limerick have had a golden era. Clare have had a good few players come through in the last 10 years. Maybe this is just Kilkenny's fallow period, and in the next 2-3 years we'll start to see a crop of players crop up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is cyclical. You see it with Donegal a couple of years ago in the football. Before Jim McGuinness came back, people were talking about, God, I don't know if Donegal football is ever going to recover from where it was.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at 3-4 young players that have been brought through by Jim McGuinness out of nowhere that are some of the best players in the country.
Mm.
So it can change on the flip of a coin and the flip of a manager, and within a year or two you can see star players come through that maybe the likes of Henry Shefflin will know from clubs. Likes of Ballyhale obviously is a club that he'll know well. Like maybe there are a couple of players that just aren't getting opportunities that might come through now.
Yeah, and look, there's a style of play thing and all of that kind of stuff as well, and whether they play like Kilkenny, maybe, you know, it's like, do you have to play like Limerick do, or can you adjust to the Kilkenny style for the modern era? There's lots of things like that as well. It's not just a hurlers thing. Although I do take your point about the bench stuff. Like TJ Reid's one of the best hurlers of all time. 38-year-old TJ Reid is Kilkenny's second most important forward, maybe third most if Adrian Mullen is fully fit. 26-year-old TJ Reid was often on the bench.
Mm.
You know, and that was ridiculous. I mean, at the time, that was, I always remember Daly when he was like Dublin manager talking about the talent that he'd be going, oh, TJ Reid, like TJ Reid. And it's like, TJ Reid's not that good. He's only a sub. What are you talking about? And then obviously he makes the impact he makes. And by about 2015, 2014, he's like the main man. But TJ Reid spent his early 20s on the bench for Kilkenny. And now his late 30s are being spent as a total linchpin because there's nobody there to replace him, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot to be said for Derek Ling as well, stepping away, and that. It takes a brave person to know when the right time is. I think he's probably recognised that, like you said, that maybe they need a new bit of energy in there in someone like Henry Shefflin. But then also he's spoken about his own personal life and it taking a bit of a toll on his family life.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I think as well, if he leaves now, he leaves with his reputation as a player and manager. If he stays a couple more seasons and it keeps going downward,
I agree.
It definitely affects his legacy in Kilkenny.
Yeah, Tommy Walsh was on with us after the game as well, and he isn't actually as he's probably not thinking as that the future is as grim as some people might think.
You look at last year, being dollar and semi fine. The year before, like a half time, into a couple of clear into half time in the media box, like, and just the opposite. It looked like we were one and win another dollar and semi fine against Clare. It looked like they were going to lose and have a great much campaign. But they came back in the great second half and beat us. But again, we were in a winning position that day. We're in the dollar and final the year before against the great Limerick team. The year before, we're in dollar and final again, beaten by Limerick again by only a couple of points that day. We could have won that dollar. And so, George, This is the fourth real blip in so many years. And these things happen. And you see, you do have like, awfully definitely die. They're the best county ever to bring through a group. So you know what I mean, the same in all counties. Even if you got through two or three players every year, you have a great team. Not normally, it doesn't happen. Normally, they come with groups. And often come with groups. And at the moment, they are. You know, that 22 minor team they lost, they lost Don and contested two, 21 All-Irelands, one of them, doing a Leinster Schools as an office schools group. Even the B teams, and individual schools of them, were winning All-Irelands there in the B competitions. So these are
Group comes last couple of years before this, they weren't really a challenger competitor, so really it was only Kilkenny, Galway, Wexford, Dublin, really at the time, you know, Wexford, Dublin, as I know, we just have work to do, but it is going on at the moment. Yeah, it'll be 12 years without an All-Ireland next year for Kilkenny. So we'll see if Tommy's right there. Sometimes it is just minor tweaks or one or two players coming through. They're not miles off. It's not as if they were hammered in any of the games, but certainly on the way down at the moment. And we'll see who the new manager is. Just got back to the papers here. There's a couple of stories I want to talk about on the Mail. Nina Barfield's talk of South Africa return. We'll get to that in a second. But then a gathering pace story, O'Neill v. Keane and why there's only one real option for Celtic, says the Mail. They're going for Robbie Keane. This is a spoiler alert there. And you think this is a story gathering a bit of pace?
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be Keane. Met with Dermot Desmond, according to the reports this week. And the reports were that he had to impress Dermot Desmond with his whatever he was going to bring, whether a presentation or whatever Robbie Keane prepares for these conversations. But look, it's a pretty grim situation that Celtic find themselves in, that 6 months down the line, they knew they were going to need a new manager, and the best the board could come up with were the current 74-year-old manager who came back twice this season to help them out.
Won the double.
Or Robbie Keane, who has managed Maccabee Tel Aviv and Ferencváros, lost Ferencváros the title this year, which is a disaster, by the way.
It's one of the worst seasons in years.
Yeah, it's a disaster. He is... On Robbie Keane, it's a weird one because, firstly, he's underqualified for the job. The clubs that he's managed does not merit getting the Celtic job, and the job that he's done there does not merit getting the Celtic job. I'm willing to toss that aside because Ange Postecoglou, you could probably have made the argument that he wasn't qualified for the job, but there's also the element with the fans here, and I've not seen one positive response to Robbie Keane getting this job, and yeah. It goes beyond the he's not qualified for the job argument. It goes more to the heart of it, which is there's real question marks over the clubs that Robbie Keane has managed in his career and the morality of it. Like, he managed Maccabee Tel Aviv, who, firstly, Israel were on the brink of war with Gaza at this point and have since done what they've done in Gaza. But Maccabee Tel Aviv themselves as a club, their fan base are ridiculously... are ridiculous in the way they go about things. They're famously racist. They have chants like, let the IDF win, F the Arabs. Why is there no school in Gaza? There are no children left in Gaza. That's a chant that the Maccabee Tel Aviv fans sing. And Robbie Keane was the head of that club.
Yeah.
Like, and with Ferencváros as well, just a slight one on Ferencváros. Look, you can't blame Robbie Keane for the ultras of the clubs that he managed. That's an argument you can't make. But the ultras for Ferencváros, they are described as a safe haven for neo-fascists and racists and Nazis. That's how they are described in a report by The Guardian. And Robbie Keane, again, was the head of that club. So aside from the fact that Celtic fans will obviously be against that from a morality standpoint and are actually on the other side of the argument, there's real question marks as to, like, what was Robbie Keane thinking taking those jobs?
Yeah, I have to say, and the Maccabee stuff is a point well taken, and I thought some of the backlash from Keir Starmer and his crew for a safety decision made by the Midlands Police when the Villa game happened this year, it's just so ridiculous and so just such a sign that they were jumping on a story based on what they thought rather than what they actually learned. And when you did read about them and you read about the behaviour in Amsterdam a couple of years ago, that obviously resulted in a worldwide story where they were attacked in a anti-Semitic attack, but you actually read what happened in detail and that's not how it comes across. I think Robbie Keane is well within his rights to have a level of ignorance towards that kind of thing when he takes the Maccabee job. The issue that I don't think he can run away from, no matter how much he wants to, is staying there for the second season.
Yeah.
Because a lot happened over that first year. And I think that really matters. I think it matters towards his legacy in this country. And I think Celtic fans... It's funny, I was going to ask you about that because we get a lot of comments when we talk about Robbie about how Celtic fans would never accept somebody who managed, you know, Tel Aviv and so on. How much of that to the average Celtic fan matters versus, you know, the online element, the sort of social Celtic fans, you know, social justice Celtic fans, the Green Brigade and so on, versus everyone who just goes to Parkhead every week?
No, I think this will matter to the majority of Celtic fans. It is a club that has been steeped in the historical protests when it comes to Palestine, and that wasn't just a Green Brigade thing, that was a full fan base thing. Celtic fans in general are active and activist fans. So, I mean, they would be quite similar to someone who went against the ideas of Liverpool taking over the Liverpool job. I just don't think that it's a match for it. And look, you can say that Robbie Keane was just a manager at these clubs and you're entitled to that opinion, but he is the representative of that club as the manager. And if you're the representative of these clubs that hold these ideals and their fan base hold these opinions, then you have to take some internal thoughts into whether or not you want to be the representative of that and you want your face to be associated with those clubs. And I just think in terms of Robbie Keane and coming to Celtic, he's had a hiding for nothing from the beginning. Because if he loses one, two matches, it's up in arms. And I don't know if this is one of those situations where it'll be grand if he starts winning matches. I just don't think that it's going to float well with the Celtic fans at all.
Yeah. Like, I think Robbie's a big boy and he made a big boy decision. And that's fair enough. If he chose to go to Tel Aviv, that's his own prerogative. But, you know, you're going to face some consequences if you try and come back to a club like Celtic, where they are of a very opposite view on those topics. Like,
I think you are entitled to be. I think pre-war, and I think people who would have known, people would have had certain opinions on Israel, obviously. Anyway, but I do think it was far more reasonable for somebody who was just a footballer and possibly apolitical to sort of just see it as a, you know what I mean? It wasn't a pariah on the world stage in the way it is now. Obviously, I think
I'd have my reservations about that.
If you were looking into things, I think you would have it. I think it's totally understandable in the world we lived in pre-2022 that Robbie Keane would have no opinion on that. I'm not saying that you had no opinion on it, or I did. No, but I think it's reasonable that Robbie had none.
That's what I'm saying. It's fair enough that he made that decision for himself, but I don't want to get into it too much. I think we spoke a good bit last week about this topic, and everyone knows our views. But the decision to go after him, on Celtic's point of view, is just another example of disconnection between the fans and the higher ups in that club. It's bizarre. It's like they don't take it into account whatsoever what the fans are thinking.
Yeah,
and they will quickly find out should they appoint them what they do think. And that will become overwhelming.
And it's such an arrogance. It's laced in arrogance, like that we know best. And also, it as a kind of a distant sort of somebody who's not a Celtic supporter, but I value the connection between this country and that club, right? You know, and the historical connection and so on, right? It worries me that there's a arrogant Irish ownership involved who have decided that their way forward and their way that they're going to piss off the fans is by appointing an Irish hero. And I think that has the possibility of creating some disconnect between and a bit of resentment
towards
the Irish element of Celtic.
There's already a massive disconnect between the Celtic board and the fans and the Irish element. I think you kind of get that with the way that some of the Irish players have been treated at the club over the last number of years. There's almost a feeling of fed up amongst the Celtic fan base that of the Irish players maybe perceived to be getting favourable treatment. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think Liam Scales, for example, has earned his place. A final point on Robbie Keane. I'm not saying that Robbie Keane shouldn't have a future in management or shouldn't continue to get jobs because he has managed these clubs. I just think it is so far against the ideals of the club that he's going to.
It's mental, yes.
That it's such a shock that they would consider it as an option. It would be like appointing a neo-Nazi to the St. Pauli job in Germany. Like, that's how far we're talking about
here. Yeah, no, it's in no way that, and we're not in any way suggesting.
No, I'm just saying that it's just the widening of the gap is what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, that is the it's complete opposites and ideals of what Maccabi Tel Aviv are as a club and what Celtic are as a club. Yeah. And it's just surprising
I and it's not to be overstating this point, I think it's really important to clarify. You're talking about appointing someone from club to club being that contrast, and I completely agree with that, but the person I think has shown no signs of ever endorsing or
totally.
Having any kind of political sway whatsoever, I would say, in either way. So I think
it's the association with him and those clubs that's the massive problem. I'm not saying that Robbie Keane holds those opinions himself. On Dermot Desmond, we'll move on to Dermot Desmond, because
more Robbie Keane thing. Sorry, you said earlier on about him not being qualified for the Celtic job based off of the jobs he's done elsewhere. What level of job is he qualified for if you don't think he should be in the running for managing a team that is pretty much in a two-horse race to win their domestic league and will
Rangers.
Be playing in the Champions League unless they make an absolute balls at a qualification process like they did last year?
It does feel like the next step.
The job is vastly beyond him.
How?
Vastly beyond him.
What job isn't vastly beyond him then?
Mid to low championship.
mid to low championship.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. He's managed. No, sorry, did he succeed?
Mid to low championship, like the mid table championship team would probably join Celtic and Rangers in a title race.
That's what everyone says. That's what everyone says.
But like, would they not?
No, they wouldn't. So but there's the reality of the situation. They just wouldn't.
But and there is a difference between the size of the club in Celtic, which I think everybody would freely, you know, I don't think you need to convince anybody is a massive club. Right, versus the level they have to play at because of their current resources, because of a lack of a TV deal. Now, it's not a slight on Celtic, like but they are operating financially with mid-table championship teams.
I completely agree. I'll put it this way, right? We're not going down the road of where would Celtic finish in the Premier League. What kind of result do you think a mid to low championship team would get against Bayern Munich?
Yeah, but
answer the question.
Okay, that's fine. They'd probably beat them, right? But okay, but Robbie Keane's
close would a mid to low championship team
get?
I don't know.
We're not going to see that
because
happen.
Celtic were within 3 minutes of beating Bayern Munich in the Champions League last year.
Across two ties in a fixture, right? Robbie Keane's managing Ferencváros, right? Who are essentially in the exact same position as Celtic are on the domestic level. He went and managed them in Europe and had a pretty successful campaign in Europe. Could he not do that with Celtic?
I don't think he is.
I think he's more than capable of doing that with Celtic on a footballing level outside of everything else that we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes. I think to say that he's, you know, and I like Celtic. I was happy Celtic won the league, by the way. Mm. I'm not one of these Celtic haters for whatever reason. I just think that he's more than capable of, I don't think that's out of his depth at all, personally. But
We wouldn't know yet because, again, I think the idea of him having a great time with Ferencváros is one of those things that's looked at very, paper deep and then, you actually look into it and it wasn't that successful at all and they would be expecting more. But I do think that the level of where he's managed, I think that is the pool that Celtic are swimming in. That's the next step up.
Celtic beat Ferencváros, I think, by 4 to 5 goals over 2 legs in the Champions League 2 years ago.
I know, but so, we're talking about it as a step up.
That's fine. But
if somebody does really well at Ferencváros, there's a good chance like that the next step they take is to a Celtic-sized club. Or is current in their current guys.
The last, Ange aside, but I think Ange is important because Ange won an Asian Cup, so we're talking about a different level of manager again. The last couple of Celtic managers have been Ange Postecoglou, Brendan Rodgers, who's an FA Cup winning manager, and finished top 5 in the Premier League the last couple of times. And you're telling me that the Ferencváros manager...
Wilfred Nancy is the last...
Wilfred Nancy, his 6 games aside. the next step is Robbie Keane, who's on the same level as that. Like, that's the pool that Celtic are fishing in here. Because before that, when Brendan Rodgers got the job, Eddie Howe was all but in the door. So we're talking about mid-level Premier League manager there.
They wouldn't get,
Rafa Benitez wouldn't get
Eddie Howe now, though. Like, if they were
the equivalent of Eddie Howe,
most certainly. He got the Newcastle job after the Ange Postecoglou.
Think Eddie Howe would take the Celtic job now?
But he was willing to take the Celtic job just before he got offered the Newcastle job.
But why did he take the Newcastle job then?
Because Celtic messed up the deal.
Yeah, okay.
And then he got offered the Newcastle job. But that's the pool they were fishing. Anyway, one final point on Dermot Desmond before I finish up. Dermot Desmond acts with impunity within Celtic. He is not the owner. He should not be just making wide-ranging decisions for the club. He is the majority stakeholder. His decisions have to be passed by the board. Celtic are a PLC. He does not run the club. He does not own the club. And I find it bizarre that the board are just willing to go with the decision that Dermot Desmond decides because...
What's his ownership stake?
34%.
34?
Yeah.
Okay. So I assume he has enough allies.
He's well within his rights to hold these discussions and be a major decision maker, but he is not the ultimate decision maker at Celtic, which he acts like.
Yeah. Okay. All interesting. Dara, before we finish up... I mentioned the Nina Barr story there.
Yeah.
There's kind of talk that he might be back off to the Springboks, but it's all kind of escalated in the last day or two, even since we spoke yesterday morning.
Yeah, it's all blown up. It's gone. Yeah, we spoke a good bit on yesterday's show about the story, and I suppose not to get back into the crux of it, but there was a media day on Monday in which you know, Neen Abra was asked about his future with Leinster, and he said some things that kind of threw it all into disrepute, and that he's not sure if he will be around next year, and that's based on the media attention and the lack of value he feels the fans and the media have for him at the minute. I think it was always the case that people felt like it was a natural thing that he would just go back to the Springboks eventually anyway, regardless of whether he saw out his contract with Leinster or not, which ends in the end of the 2027 season. Yeah. So feasibly, he could still see out his contract and then join up with the Springboks last minute before the World Cup. I don't think that's a crazy thing to think that would happen. But now it feels like things have blown up a little bit, and it's becoming increasingly likely that he may walk out the door a year ahead of his contract finishes. And which, when he was speaking about this yesterday, and I tend to agree in that, look, maybe his defensive style hasn't suited Leinster the best this season up to this point. And, you know, he's been there for a couple of seasons now, and that it hasn't meshed 100%. That doesn't mean it's his fault. Maybe it's buy-in, maybe it's the clashing styles in attack, who knows. But it is a shame that a coach of his calibre, a World Cup winner, a double World Cup winner, is almost being pushed out the door.
Yeah.
Out of an Irish province. Like, we're pretty lucky to have him within the Irish rugby system, and we could very well see him leave in these circumstances. I can just see the storyline going into the 2027 World Cup when he returns to the Springboks with a vengeance against Irish rugby, because we pushed him out the door. And I'm not blaming Rory O'Connor at all. I thought he did very well in the exchange. I think he's getting a lot of unwarranted abuse online.
Happens,
around.
Doesn't it?
Tends to happen, yeah.
How many followers do you have?
How many followers do I have? They've gone up since I was asked that question. I think there's two things to be true at once in that. We probably aren't appreciating him as a coach enough in the Irish rugby system, but at the same time, I think people are allowed to question his defensive system and whether he's adding to what Leinster already have there.
Would you say that there's sometimes it's just a fit? Like, you look at what Van Graan is doing at Bath. Like, he's obviously an unbelievable coach. Nothing will convince me that that would have turned around in Munster. I just don't think it was working. I think even say something like Razzie and Nienaber when they were at Munster, like, you know what I mean? I think it was going better, and I think they would have figured something out. But it just felt like, it felt like the right time when he left, let's say. You know,
it's not a new thing in sport.
Exactly. Yeah.
Some coaches fit in different teams.
Like, should we look at the fact that we can't make things fit in Irish rugby? Are we a little bit too stuck to our ways, or is it just we have a culture that works? And
can I just put?
We're happy to have new ideas, but we don't want to go too far away from them. Other countries are like that too. You know.
Yeah, and like my opinion on it, and I'll put it quite simply, is that you have a high energy defence, which is a Neen Abra style. That's fine. That's won two World Cups. And then you have a high energy attack in Tyler Blaindell style, which is phase rugby, work the ball in the 22, try and break down the team through, you know, you're going to have more rucks than anyone else. You're not going to kick the ball too much. You're going to hold on to it phase after phase after phase. That's going to zap a lot of energy. So you're asking quite a lot from your players on both sides of the ball, which, you know, doesn't take a huge brain to figure out that might not work in high-pressure environments. It works, you know, week by week in the URC against the Ospreys and Glasgow, a great team. That's a bad example. But the Lions, say, last weekend. But when you're going up against Bordeaux in, you know, 30-degree heat in Bilbao, probably not the best formula. But, I think it's an unfortunate situation in how it's played out, because I think Neen Abra's a great coach and a nice guy, and it's just unfortunate that it's kind of turned sour the way it has.
Fields' breaking point now, though, doesn't it?
It doesn't
doesn't seem like a huge way back from it. They'll obviously, if they have two more games, we'll get through these next 2 weeks in relative harmony, and then we'll start hearing the real truth.
Yeah. So this weekend to focus on first and foremost, anyway. And the thing is as well, he has the intel on these teams. Like, he's a former coach of the Stormers as well, which is very helpful going into big fixtures like this, like a semi-final. But yeah, I think it'd be a big loss, but yeah, it does feel like it's gone past a certain point now.
Okay, we'll talk about the game itself tomorrow, I believe, and later in the week. But that's it for The lads, we're going to be speaking about Gaelic football coaching in just a minute. Off the Ball Breakfast is with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Off the Ball GAA.
What a game of football. What a game of football for the neutral, I suppose, watching it at home on TV. What a day for our supporters of Westmeath and the people of Westmeath.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.